Welcome to From Our Lips to Your Ears, the Local Immigration Partnership Podcast. This is the second episode of our series. And as you heard on the first, this is a podcast about newcomers to Canada. My name is Damilola Unime, and I'm here to have frank and open conversations with immigrants and refugees to Canada. I also happen to be an immigrant. I've been here for about 3 years. And I'm going to be talking to people who help newcomers, like the people that work at the local immigration partnerships, or LIPS. Our guests today are all members of the Lloydminster LIP. Lloydminster sits on the border between Alberta and Saskatchewan. It has a population of just over 30,000 people, with about 4,500 of them immigrants. The region is also home to several Indigenous communities, including Onion Lake Cree Nation. Indigenous peoples have called this region home since time immemorial. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the relationship between newcomers to Canada and Indigenous peoples. But first, we'll hear from Kevin John, a member of the Onion Lake Cree Nation, who has sought to deepen understanding of Indigenous peoples among newcomers through an activity called the Blanket Exercise. We'll also hear from Susan Cambridge, Ben Okwaye, Kimo Mansere. They all traced distinct paths to Canada. They came as economic immigrants, or they came as refugees fleeing violence in their countries of birth. But not long after arriving in Canada, they all learned about the dark reality of this country's history. This was totally different than the idyllic picture of Canada in the mind's eye of many newcomers. They learned of Canada's colonial legacy, of the residential school system, and the systemic discrimination that Indigenous peoples continue to face. So we'll talk to Susan, Ben, and Kimo about their own journeys and these realizations. And we're going to see how newcomers and Indigenous peoples are taking on systemic discrimination in our communities, in our healthcare system, and in our educational system, and how they are doing this work together. In building these alliances, Indigenous communities have really led the way. They've sought to build connections and build understanding with newcomers. And the blanket exercise is one particularly effective tool at doing just that. Kevin John has been facilitating blanket exercises for a long time. And I reached out to him to help me understand what the blanket exercise is and why it's been very, very effective.
Danse, ni tsiga son, Kevin John, the gua. What I said to you was in Cree, the tongue of my people, and I spoke to you in Cree and I introduced myself in Cree to work against the loss of language that came as a result of generations of Indigenous relations history in Canada. The oppressive history of residential schools and the brokenness of families that this has caused.
The blanket exercise is one of such programs that the Lloydminster LIP has adopted to help connect newcomers and Indigenous people, for them to understand the histories and be familiar with the roots of the country on which the lands they live on. Can you briefly explain the blanket exercise, how it's done, and the significance of this program?
So the Kairos Blanket Exercise is a participatory exercise where we gather a minimum of 22 participants. We bring them together and we lay out these blankets. We put a circle of chairs, one chair for each person participating, and we lay out blankets in the middle of those chairs. And the blankets represent Turtle Island, or the part of Turtle Island that we are on, which is Canada. And We invite the participants to remove their shoes and get on the blankets, and we give them each artifacts. Artifacts of indigenous nature. Some of them are powwow artifacts. Some of them are native artisans created for us or gifted to us. Some are things that are of sentimental value from our family members, and some are what are considered the sacred medicines. We use sage and sweetgrass in this exercise as well. So each of these artifacts is given to a participant, and they begin with a trading exercise, at which point they're given 5 to 10 minutes to walk around those blankets together and just talk about the artifacts each of them is holding. And they can ask us questions about those artifacts. And if they feel like someone else is holding something they would rather have, we encourage them to just offer to trade for that as part of the exercise. Now, with the medicines, they are never meant to be traded or bartered for. They're only meant to be given as a gift to those in need. And so we encourage those who are carrying the sage and sweetgrass to, if you feel like there's someone you've seen in the group today that you would like to give it to, please offer it to them as a gift and take nothing in return. We call this trading exercise to an end, and then we begin the script. The script is about 80 minutes of interactive script where I usually represent the European in the script, and my sister or my co-facilitator usually represents the narrator. And then there are 22 scrolls that are randomly handed out to the participants. Each of them are numbered, and they will be called upon by number to be read at some point throughout this narration. It's essentially a very good 80-minute history lesson of 400 years of Indigenous relations history, including royal proclamation, government laws and rules, and things like that. And there are also personal perspectives of Indigenous people across Canada mixed in that are either part of the narration or part of the scrolls that are called upon to be read throughout the session. As we move through the session, though, different people are leaving the blankets for different reasons throughout history, and often for reasons of death. Through this history, many Indigenous people have died for various reasons, including the giving of smallpox-infected blankets by Lord Jeffrey Amherst, and so on. So these historical events caused people to exist no longer. So when that happens, those people who are called upon through that narration, they are read a certain part of this historical narration, and they are asked to sit on the chairs, to leave the blankets, to represent their passing. In the end of the session, we are folding the blankets up as more and more people leave. And in the end of the session, you have a clear representation of where we are now with regards to Indigenous people only inhabiting less than 0.5% of the Canadian land base, where prior to contact, Indigenous people were free to move as they needed to in order to sustain themselves. We close the session and then we start the sharing circle, which is equally important, I feel, to the blanket exercise itself. Everyone is given the floor for a moment. We move in the direction of the sun as we're sitting in the circle. So we move clockwise around the circle and give each person some time to speak about what they've seen and what they've heard throughout this exercise and give us their transparent and protected perspectives.
And why do you think it's important for newcomers to have this experience?
It's important for newcomers to have this experience because we have many folks who come from other countries who, yes, they have experienced some form of trouble often. Many of them have come here for reasons of instability within their countries and things like that. Much of that is as a result of the European patriarchal colonization assimilation in their countries for as many years or even longer than it's happened in Canada. And I think Canada is sometimes seen and viewed with rose-colored glasses because this history has happened all over the world, but this colonization history has also happened in Canada. But the difference between many places in the world where this has happened and Canada is that in Canada, it was intentionally hidden. It is hidden from education systems. It is hidden from university systems and post-secondary systems of education. And it has been for all this time where, you know, for the last 60 years or even more, This type of colonization and assimilation happening in other countries was well known. I think it's important for newcomers to know this history as they come to Canada and know that because of this history, you know, they have many Indigenous peoples in this country who understand where they're coming from if they have experienced the fallout, the intergenerational trauma, and the social pathologies that come from this patriarchal supremacy and the colonization and the assimilation that's been exercised in their home countries.
What would you say should be done differently to help newcomers connect with the history and realities of Indigenous peoples in Canada?
Well, I haven't found a better example that can be done within a two-hour period than the Kairos Blanket exercise. And I think it's a very important thing. I would like to see that adopted by all LIPs, at least, and acknowledged through the Immigration and Citizenship website, so that this information is foundational information that is offered and that those opportunities would be offered to our newcomers. I think that would be helpful for Immigration and Citizenship Canada to make that a part of the orientation of our newcomers when they come, that that opportunity is there, and that they make every effort to ensure that that opportunity is taken.
That was Kevin John. Kevin is a member of the Onion Lake Cree Nation. Lloydminster is home to many diverse peoples and communities. And the Lloydminster Lip, it's not just a blanket exercise. They do lots of other programs and events to bring the community together. One of those events is Lloydfest. It's an annual multicultural event that builds connections between local Indigenous peoples and Lloydminster's newcomers. Susan Cambridge is the brain behind the festival. I reached out to her to learn about Lloydfest and to learn of Susan's own journey to Canada. So what informed your decision to migrate to Canada?
Well, it was an opportunity that was presented for my family. My husband at the time had family in Canada. And we said, you know what, you never know. The opportunity presented itself. Let us go ahead and apply. It took just about 5 years for everything to come through to fruition, because it was not something that we had the top of our list, but it was there. And then, you know, my husband had an ailing sister, and we knew at some point in time we would probably want to come and spend some time with her. I also looked at the education opportunity for the children, because so many people spend a lot of money to send their children abroad. As an international student, it is quite expensive. And we thought, hey, Canada is pretty diverse itself, so not a bad idea. So we waited and we were successful.
So Susan, prior to your arrival in Canada and upon arrival, were you aware of the history of the country that you were moving to? Were you aware of the issues of Indigenous people in this country?
I would have to say that I didn't know a lot about the history of the Indigenous people as I know it now, more than the fact that we know that, hey, they were here first and that they were very present. But I can't say that I was privy to the history in its entirety.
And how did you become aware of this?
Actually landing in Lloyd and spending time here. And I think it's because where we are located as well, you know, north of us, we do have a lot of the reserves, and just being a part of the community, actually being involved in the Lloydminster Native Friendship Center. And I started to bond with them. And I come from a diverse background as well. And I was like, okay, so what it is about the food, why their ancestors are so important to them, the drums, the clothing, the powwow, everything that goes into their culture. I was really, really intrigued. The one thing is that I noticed is that I didn't see much of them around me in the community where I lived. So I started to ask a few questions.
And what were some of the answers that you got to the questions that you were asking?
I started to realize that there was a lot of hurt that they felt based on colonization, how things happened to a very large extent. And so, you know, by understanding the blanket exercise and what took place, I said, oh, so this is why there is still a lot of hurt and feelings of isolation and not being totally embraced to a very large extent.
Did that realization of what Indigenous people have gone through and what they still go through in Canada, did that make you feel some kind of way about becoming an immigrant or becoming a new Canadian yourself?
Yes, I felt sad in my spirit because I started to ask myself, what is real and what isn't, in terms of you hear certain platforms where there is talk about embrace and diversity, you hear it, but I wasn't actually seeing it. So I said to myself, I wonder what's going to happen to people like myself. How are we going to really fit in? Are we going to feel that way? And if so, what am I going to do? How am I going to approach this?
So let's talk about your involvement with the Lloydminster Lib.
Well, I got involved by meeting the coordinator, Kim O'Mansory, through the Catholic Social Services. He invited me to be part of the committee because he thought I had something to offer, as well as, you know, help in any way I can in trying to make this a progressive way for newcomers, but by extension, still understanding the importance of bridging the gap with the Indigenous, because they are here. They represent any and every part of Canada.
As the brain behind Lloyd Festival, you know, Lloyd Fest, you have taken it a step further to foster relationships between Indigenous people and newcomers to bring everyone together in the community by starting Lloyd Fest. Can you speak a little to what this festival is about, the significance, and why you think, or why at the time you thought, that this festival was important?
When you come from a background of cultural celebrations, we celebrate our carnival, and our carnival in Trinidad and Tobago ushers in thousands and thousands and thousands of people from all around the world. So that's number one. So you see that in terms of the people who actually come into your country, and they come from different parts of the world. So coming here to Canada, I took that for granted. I just said, well, I am sure. I mean, I knew of a couple of things, Caribana, Cari West, you know, all Caribbean. But more importantly, I said to myself, there are different pockets of events that take place with these different cultures. But what about seeing all of them at once? That's such a beautiful, colorful event. And it brings people together. I mean, it is so nice to see food vendors of different cultures, you know, next to each other, people coming to buy from each other, community. It is just a beautiful thing to see. Bonding and cultures, different traditions, different dance, food, music. It is the most beautiful thing that you can see for humanity coming together. And in that, there's an appreciation, there is respect, there is knowledge, there is understanding, there's camaraderie, there's community spirit, there's family bonding, and the list goes on. And so the intrinsic value of Lloyd Fest is to continue to embrace this and to continue to develop it, for yet it not be done, it will be lost. And that is important. And in so doing, you do have the Indigenous people coming out and celebrating with us. So I checked myself and I said, well, sometimes they make little appearances and different things depending, but this Lloyd Fest offers them an open forum of really celebrating. So it's important to keep immigrants and their traditions alive and celebrate with each other, share the differences and share the things that ultimately bring us together.
You already said that in your settlement process, you really didn't have any idea of the history of the issues of Indigenous people in this country. No one told you. How would you like to see this done differently?
When we have newcomers and we have these agencies that deal with newcomers, one of the first things we should be able to have is an open house invitation where First Nations are brought to this event. They meet us and we meet them off the bat, right? So whether it's with the Catholic Social Services, whether it's the LIP doing it, but I'm thinking maybe once a year, twice a year, there's an event where let's meet. This should really be at the heart of the situation. But then again, you know, people say, well, you know, if you have something so sensitive for newcomers who arrive, then maybe it might be a little jolting. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? There is that aspect of it, right? Here am I now trying to settle, and now, whoo, I'm dealing with all of this. It might be a little intense, but at the end of the day, it's the truth, right? So I think that's important, because if I didn't go out and make myself absolute to go meet them and get involved, there are some cultures I don't think that have had the experience of meeting them one-on-one, to be honest. They know of them, but they have had not had that personal interconnection, right?
And that was Susan Cambridge. She's the president of the International Festivals of Lloydminster Society, an organizer of Lloydfest. Canada is celebrated globally for its public healthcare system. It's thought of as universal, free, totally accessible to all those who need it. But in reality, we know it's just not. There are huge gaps. Essential things like dental, long-term care, or mental health services, they aren't covered for most people. And even when something is covered, it doesn't mean you receive the treatment you deserve. And that's because racialized communities often face stigma, bias, and institutionalized racism. This is something that Indigenous communities have long known, and Canadian newcomers like Kimo Mansory quickly learned. Kimo is the coordinator of the Lloydminster Lip. Well, he's worn many hats. He's been a pilot, an animator, and he's also been a nurse. As a nurse, he saw how newcomers and Indigenous peoples faced similar challenges. I reached out to learn more about these challenges, how Kimo discovered them, and how he's pushing back. Upon your arrival in Canada in 2002, you made a career switch. You used to be a pilot in Sierra Leone, and you decided to become a nurse. What informed that decision?
I came here as a refugee, and I was shot on my neck. And during the process, Medicines and Frontier and Red Cross were actually picking dead bodies around, and I was rescued. And so when I came to Canada, that was one of the things that inspired me to actually go into the medical field. And I work in group homes because I directly wanted to work in the healthcare field. So I made a switch and I upgraded, went to nursing school, finished at Grammar Curran in 2008. And I practiced for a couple of years at the University of Alberta. So what inspired me to switch is, I think, the caring nature of Red Cross and Medicine Sans Frontières that we are supporting victims in my country during the war.
During your time as a nurse, what challenges did you see newcomers and Indigenous people face in regards to accessing healthcare?
There are tons and tons of challenges that immigrants, especially Black immigrants, as well as Indigenous people face in the healthcare. And in fact, that's why I am in part of a group that is Ribbon Rouge, the Black Caribbean Caucus, that is actually fighting for health equity, because I saw some of those health inequity in the healthcare field. I'll give you an instance of that. Black people are prone to having sickle cell anemia, and sickle cell is a disease that actually affects the your bone and blood circulation, and it comes with a lot of pain. A lot of nurses don't have that background of what sickle cell is and what is associated with it. So when a Black person comes to the hospital having this pain, and because of the perception and stereotype that they have about Black people, to think Black people are seeking drugs. That's why they are complaining, oh, we just gave you a painkiller. So that perception is there. And it's the same thing I saw with Indigenous people who are coming to the hospital. Many people are with the assumption that Indigenous people feeling pain, asking for pain medication, are just drug seekers. It's not actually real pain that they are feeling. So these were some of the things that I have seen whilst I was practicing. And I think that's some of the things that influence what I'm doing today in the organizations that I'm involved in, working towards health equity, pushing for that, and in my role as the LEAP coordinator as well in Lloydminster.
That urge to help marginalized groups, mainly Black people, also Indigenous people that you worked with or that you helped to access better healthcare. That's what you've just said. That's what spurred you into making yet another career decision, another career move rather. And now you work with the Lloydminster LEAP. Could you speak a little to why you decided that this industry of settlement of immigrants is where you wanted to help next?
I have volunteered in many, many nonprofit organizations, mostly. I looked at the challenges I went through. I looked at some of the things that people don't necessarily know about the differences in immigration, the different type of immigrant who come to Canada and the challenges they face. In that way, I'm trying to bridge that gap so mainstream can understand the challenges ethnocultural people are having, and as well as ethnocultural people understanding how to navigate the system. I have a health background, so I can help with the systems that actually support immigrants by actually getting involved and taking this role as the LEAP coordinator.
As the LEAP coordinator in Lloydminster, what are some of the initiatives that you have come up with to foster this growth between Indigenous people and new immigrants or newcomers?
My first year as a LEAP coordinator, I attended it's a conference, and in that conference, I attended what is called the blanket exercise. The experience I got actually triggered what I've been doing in fostering relationship between immigrants and Indigenous people. I have partnered with the Lloydminster Native Friendship Center to do other activities like having immigrant seniors and Indigenous seniors coming together to celebrate Christmas. Other initiatives between the LEAP, the Gateway for Newcomers, and the Lloydminster Native Friendship Center have done was to bring immigrant women, including Indigenous women, to cook, sharing food. Today, they will say they have a Nigerian lady preparing Nigerian jollof rice, for example, and that person will teach, or the group of Nigerian women will teach the rest of immigrant women, including Indigenous women, how to cook jollof rice. So it's the same way the Indigenous person would want to cook or make bannock, and we'll teach. And we do that all at the Native Friendship Center. Going there and choosing that particular place to do all that, it was deliberate to foster that relationship between immigrants and Indigenous people.
You had the privilege of attending a blanket exercise in 2017, and you decided to replicate this program so that newcomers early on in their journey of settling in this country, they are aware of the history. Can you speak a little to why it's important for you to connect newcomers and Indigenous people and what the significance of the blanket exercise is to you as a new Canadian?
I'll encourage any immigrant, a non-immigrant, non-Indigenous person to attend the blanket exercise. I've attended about three or four of them. No one blanket exercise has the same experience. It's a whole new experience you will ever get. With the TRC call to action, there are certain call to action that I'll ask agencies and organizations to educate and teach and inform new immigrant about Indigenous people. So for me, I took that personally. That is the one of those things that I need to do as a settler in this country, to actually help educate and inform people about Indigenous history. Not knowing about Indigenous history all we hear is what we see on TV, what we read on newspaper, what we see on social media. I came here as a refugee. I became a nurse. So now I am in a position of authority. Some people will be social workers. Some people will be doctors. Some people will be lawyers. Some people. So all these areas are areas that indigenous people will be seeking support and services. If we have that stereotype about them, it doesn't matter which discipline we are in, we'll be treating them negatively all the time. So my goal, before somebody have that education, somebody settle and integrate into society, which sometimes take between 1 to 5 years, you need to give them that basic information in the beginning so that by the time they learn other things of the Canadian culture, that will be part of their culture. So tomorrow, if somebody becomes a nurse or doctor, they will understand when they see an Indigenous person in front of them seeking the services that they are providing.
From your work at the LIP and your interactions with Indigenous communities around you, what are the major flaws that you have identified in the settlement process of newcomers in Canada?
As an Indigenous person from Kabbalah, north of Sierra Leone, no stranger comes to my town without me being part of the settling or introduction of that individual. And I think one major thing that has been in the settlement process that is a flaw is that Indigenous people are not front and center in aiding the settlement and integration of people. If we include and embed some aspect of Indigenous people in our settlement, it will go a long way in actually bridging that gap. Some municipalities and some communities and some agencies are doing that, but there's a long way to go, and I think we need to do more of that.
And that was Kimo Mansory, formerly a nurse, now coordinator of the Lloydminster LIP. Canada isn't just celebrated for its healthcare system. It's also celebrated for its educational system. Canada even has a few universities that are often ranked in the top 100 schools globally. So international students, of course they want to come here. There are over 600,000 of them in Canada today. But just like the healthcare system, the educational system, it has some problems. Many universities were complicit in the residential school system, and they don't always do a great job teaching students about that legacy. Yes, there are some classes that would teach you about it, but what if you don't take any of them? They aren't required for most programs. So you could very well spend 4 years here as an international student, live with your degree, and still never receive a proper education about the history of Indigenous peoples on this land. Ben Akwai thinks this is wrong, and he's doing what he can to fix it. He's a professor at Lakeland College, and at the college, he devotes much of his time to connecting international students with Indigenous peoples. Ben is also, like Susan and Kimo, a newcomer himself. Where are you from, and you know, what informed your decision to migrate to Canada?
I am originally from Ghana, but we moved to Canada from the UK, having spent a little over a decade there. And we moved here just for a change of scenery. We wanted slightly different things here. And just, you know, as you do, you travel, you see the world, and this was part of seeing the world, and it turned out to be a wonderful experience.
In that wonderful experience, you know, of migrating to Canada, upon or, you know, prior to your arrival in Canada, were you aware of the history of Indigenous people in this country?
I had done some research, and I knew that Indigenous people in Canada had been systematically poorly treated. Some would even go as far as to say a genocide. And, you know, in some cases, absolutely true. And I didn't know the extent to which it had been done, and it wasn't clear to me how recent it was. And so some of these were exposed to me upon arrival. Coming from Africa, there's a saying that until the lion has its own historian, the story of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. You would never get the other person's perspective if they do not have their own historians. A lot of the history has been written not from the indigenous or First Nations perspective. And so a lot of valuable insights have been left out. And what we have is a version which is extremely inaccurate. And when you hear from First Nations people, when you connect with key elements of their culture, you would see and learn a whole lot more. For example, one of the things I learned was, especially through the blanket exercise, and that blanket exercise teaches you about some significant injustices that were done to First Nations people by colonizers. And it's a sobering lesson in understanding how things that have happened to First Nations people continue to affect and impact lives today. And having the opportunity to really go through it and allow it to go through you, it's transformational. It really helps you understand why we are where we are. It helps you challenge stereotypes about Indigenous people with more conviction.
Can you speak a bit to how this realization, how did it make you feel?
Well, obviously, you go through pretty much the grief cycle. You are angry about it. You feel, my goodness, how could this happen? And you see the resilience from a lot of communities. But then you also see how certain structures perpetuate those same conditions which allowed for those injustices to happen. And as an immigrant from a country that also was colonized, you see some parallels in that examples that you are confronted with. And you resolve to want to do something about it.
How did you try to do something? What did you do?
As a teacher, I have the wonderful privilege of influencing young people. And the more I learn, the more I have resources to share. My background now is an artifact used for the blanket exercise. This is sweet grass. Sometimes just by having this background invites a conversation with my students. And we talk about indigenous culture. We talk about the importance of sweet grass. We talk about how in resolving conflict, sweet grass is used by certain indigenous communities as part of their rituals and practices. This opens their eyes to, oh, so First Nations have a system of governance and a system of justice, and sweet grass forms a key part of it. Absolutely. When we talk about business law, we don't only talk about the standard Western versions. We get to talk about indigenous practices and healing circles and so on. And including these in my conversations, I believe helps my students to form a stronger understanding of the culture we should know about.
In teaching your students, in also the research that you have done, how did learning about indigenous history and all of the significance of indigenous culture, did this in any way complicate your feelings about being a new Canadian?
Early on when we came to Canada, I remember going to an event. So I was coming out of a hotel and I met this indigenous person, and they had an outfit on which suggested they were either going to an event or coming from an event or something important. And they looked at me and motioned that I come over for a quick chat. And they asked me where I was from, how my experiences had been. And they looked at me square in the face and said, "You are welcome to Canada. I welcome you. Some of the struggles you have faced are very similar to some of the struggles my people have faced. And together, we can overcome and build a stronger, better future." That moment is more powerful to me than when I went through the process to become a Canadian. And so I find a lot of meaning in these interactions, and they inform the choices I make and some of the detailed conversations we have in class.
You know, you've just described this beautiful experience that you had with an Indigenous person. Your process of settling didn't really include Indigenous people and their history. Would you like to see this done differently?
Oh, certainly. In my view, a heavy dosage of Indigenous culture should be included throughout the process. I think it should include a visit or multiple visits to First Nations communities. It should consider visits to these so-called residential schools, which we now know were not residential schools. No school has a graveyard next to it. And to become a Canadian, I don't think I felt as completely welcomed until that encounter. And I would like to see a First Nations chief or elder be part of that process of traditionally and ceremoniously welcoming new Canadians to become Canadians. I would really think that would be very helpful in informing us of some of the deep learnings that we have to do and the work we have to do in correcting a lot of the wrong that has happened in the past.
As a professor and someone who also works with the LEAP, what are some of the initiatives that you have developed to help connect your students to the history of Indigenous people and their community?
One of the things we did way early on was to have a course on Canadian culture for new international students, and constantly inviting international students to the events that the LEAP and other sister organizations partake in. During orientation, we spent a fair amount of time including a list of resources that international students could use.
What are some of these resources that are available to students?
We have had opportunities to interact with elders in the community. We've had opportunities to support students through work experience opportunities. We have had opportunities to just host events to celebrate the cultures of these international students so that they remember home, away from home. And we've had opportunities to take these students up and down the country to learn more about Canadian culture, even as they embrace their own and retain some of their practices and customs.
If there was one thing you can change in settlement process of newcomers or new immigrants in Canada, you know, to help early on foster growth and connections between Indigenous people and these newcomers, what would it be?
I would say, you know what? All newcomers have to visit Aboriginal communities. You have to visit Aboriginal communities. It will put things in perspective very quickly. Very quickly. It will help you understand your privilege as a newcomer to Canada and set you on a path to unlearning a lot of things that you would come across. Set you on a path to discovering the real history as told from the perspective of they who were once hunted. And that visit, that opportunity to partake in a healing circle, in other First Nations activity, the blanket exercise, they would form a solid foundation which will help you in your journey forward, in being better than an ally, in being a force for good, in advocating First Nations and Indigenous issues.
And with that, what is the one thing that you'd also like to see done differently from the perspective of the LEAP in helping new immigrants settle in this country?
I would want the LEAP to be a little bit more proactive. I want the LEAP to be more present. But I don't necessarily know if that's a good thing, because there are other agencies with a longer track record of offering and supporting, offering services and supporting new immigrants. Catholic Social Services immediately come to mind. So I would modify that to say, let's deepen these partnerships, but let's seek to help new migrants understand the history. Let's seek to involve new migrants quickly in activities which will help them form a better, fuller understanding of Canada's history and its place in the League of Nations, as it were.
That was Ben Akwaye. Ben is the chair of the Department of Business at Lakeland College in Alberta. I said this at the start of the episode. Indigenous peoples are really leading this process of building bridges with newcomers. So I wanted to return to Kevin John. Remember Kevin? He facilitates the blanket exercise. Kevin is really an educator. He runs an advocacy group called Asokani Gwewak. That translates to they build bridges. Kevin and the group works to educate people on Canada's colonial and assimilationist history. How was the idea for your organization, which in Cree is Asokani Gwewak, which also can be translated to they build bridges in English? How was the idea for the organization born?
Well, it was born out of a racial slur spoken in my presence. It was the sixth time in 5 months it was done actually at work. And I had let it slide, as I realized I did that all of my life. I let these racial slurs slide because I didn't want more attention drawn to myself. I didn't want it to escalate, and so I didn't challenge it. I didn't want others to join in and begin speaking those things about Indigenous people or around me or to me. And so I realized that this one day, that when it was spoken in front of about 12 people in the room, and I got up and I left. And through that experience and through my ability to be able to forgive this person and try to demonstrate forgiveness through our working life and as well as our leisure life, I've managed to facilitate an opportunity for this person to learn about why that's wrong and that there are deeper reasons why it's wrong aside from marginalization or bullying or racism. It runs deeper, and I realized that it ran deeper in me because I had not realized, I was quite surprised how diminished in value I was in that moment. And as quickly as it took to speak this profanity towards Indians, I was diminished in value, so much so that I started to wonder about all of the relationships in this room, because I knew everyone in the room between 7 and 38 years, and no one said a thing. This was striking to me. And in my brokenness, I went home and I thought about it. I spoke to my wife. We prayed about it. And I came to the conclusion that I need to be more active, proactive in educating about the colonization and assimilation history in Canada, and educating about the intergenerational trauma and all that has come from that. I am one generation removed from residential schools. My mother and my father were both in residential schools, and they came from residential school survivors. And statistically speaking, in my research, I sometimes wonder that how much of a miracle it is that I'm in the place in life that I am right now. when I look at the statistics of Indigenous people in education, crime, social services, history, and stats, I feel quite honored and blessed and thought there has to be a reason, deeper reason, as to why I am in the place in life that I am now, with a wonderful wife of 32 years and 6 children and a good career, and I have good health. And I felt like there was more to be done. And so I wanted to start an entity of some kind and decided that Facebook would be the easiest place to do that. And I came up, I talked to a fluent Cree speaker who's a Cree language programmer and asked, how can I go about, you know, bringing a Cree word to name our organization that means they build bridges? Because it came about that my mission statement is to build bridges of understanding through the truth and build bridges of hope and trust through reconciliation. But the closest Cree word was bridge people. Asukanagewak literally translates to bridge people, which is the closest short version that would be appropriate to fit in a logo and a name and identity. And this is the goal of our work, to help the restoration, the healing, and the education of others on Indigenous people. The beauty of our culture and our people and our language, but also the tragedy of this history in Canada. And so Asukanagewak on the logo is designed with Cree phonetics and some English letters, a combination of both. Asukanagewak word, as you see it on the graphic, looks like the framework of a bridge holding up the Indigenous peoples, the teepees above. And below the bridge, we have people of all ages and all colors. Looks as though they're holding up the bridge. And the reason for that is because I believe that it will take everyone in Canada, everyone born here, everyone who has immigrated to Canada, to collaborate and work with us and help educate one another, share this education and knowledge as a stepping stone to helping Indigenous people recover from this intergenerational trauma of residential schools history and all that preceded it.
And that was Kevin John, member of the Onion Lake Cree Nation. He's an educator with the group Asukanagewak, and that translates to they build bridges. And that's it for this episode of From Our Lips to Your Ears, the Local Immigration Partnership podcast. I have been your host, Damilola Unime. I'm also the series lead producer. From Our Lips to Your Ears is produced with the National Local Immigration Partnership Secretariat. From Our Lips to Your Ears is made possible through funding from Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada. It is also made possible by continued collaboration between local immigration partnerships across the country. This has been a Cited Media production. And for more community-partnered and research communication podcasts, visit citedmedia.ca. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for more episodes soon.